Blog Talk Radio.
I stroll through the pictures, what I've left behind. It once again I'm locked up in memories, they all intertwine. The memories in my mind. I know tomorrow, 'cause that dawn will come. You will never know just what you have done.
Hello, world. This is Pamela Elaine Lockridge calling from Louisiana, and I will be your host tonight. And tonight is open mic night, where we have question and answer, call-in, and discussion with a survivor professional. Tonight we have Jessica Wesley in for Dr. Nisi, who is taking a rest, resting her voice because she's been speaking out so much for children and other people who need help in being able to survive this world. And we'll talk more about that with Miss Jessica, all the legal things that are going on in the state of Texas. But I want to tell you tonight is the Stop Child Abuse Now scan number 2709. And the call-in number to call in tonight is 646-595-2118. That's 646-595-2118. And I'd like to share with you the mission of the National Association of Adult Survivors of Child Abuse, which is the acronym NASCA, N-A-A-S-C-A. And you could see our website at nasca.org. We are a nonprofit 501c3 that takes contributions to help us out with our website and with many other projects that we do. Also, we are all about child abuse trauma prevention, intervention, and recovery. We have a purpose at NASCA to address issues related to childhood abuse and trauma, including sexual assault, violent or physical abuse, emotional traumas, and neglect, and we do so with only two goals in mind. Number one, educating the public, especially as related to helping society get over its taboo of discussing childhood sexual abuse, presenting facts showing child abuse to be a pandemic worldwide problem that affects everyone. Number two, offering hope and healing through numerous paths, providing many services to adult survivors of child abuse and information for anyone interested in the many issues involving prevention, intervention, and recovery. So tonight we have our special guest, Jessica Wesley from Texas. Bring her on now. Also have Mark Lockridge. He's helping co-host the show. Okay. Hi, Jessica.
Hi, Pamela. Good evening.
Good evening. I just want to thank you for coming on tonight and helping us out with when panelists call. We're going to have an open mic with questions and answers and issues brought up. And I just kind of want to start with getting to know you. Have you ever told your story on NASCA yet?
Yes, I have.
Okay. So you were on as a special guest?
Yes, ma'am. I was on last month. And I shared a little bit of my story, my childhood, on through my story, and then just really kind of brushed over kind of what I've been doing and what I've been a part of the last year.
Okay. So what would you like to do? Would you like to just kind of tell a synopsis of your abuse, just, you know, how and when your abuse started, and just kind of, you know, your show, because you're a survivor professional, and we just want to let other survivors know that, you know, we all are survivors here.
Yes, ma'am. I think that's beautiful. And I am, yes, I am a survivor, but my passion and what I believe is the calling that God has on my life is to empower other survivors. I am their advocate. I want to be a voice for people who don't have a voice yet and haven't found it. I want to be there in the trenches with them, helping them get back on their feet. I want them, you know, I want to encourage them. I want to love on them. I want to let them know they're not alone. And so that's really my main purpose.
Awesome. So tonight is, you know, open mic question and answer. We don't have many panelists yet, but I know some panelists were saying they were going to call in. So as they come in, we'll get to them and ask, you know, see if they have any questions or anything. But is there a topic on your heart that you might want to start with?
Sure. I could kind of, like you said earlier, I could kind of go over a quick synopsis of my journey just so people would understand. You know, if they didn't hear me share my testimony before on the show, I could just give a brief overview. I was raised here in Houston. I'm a native Houstonian. Around the age of 13 is when I started using alcohol and drugs. And that was really due to the atmosphere in my home, because my parents' marriage was crumbling. My mom was, she suffered from depression. And so it was very much, a very chaotic home. You know, it was, I couldn't, you know, my main goal was to please my parents, and I couldn't please my mom because of her, you know, emotional roller coaster that she was on. And so then that put me on emotional roller coaster. It put everybody in the home on emotional roller coaster. So there was a lot of dysfunction, a lot of, you know, I would say, you know, neglect, just, you know, silent treatment, that type of thing. And then my dad really didn't have a voice in the marriage. He was very much a passive, wasn't really a strong leader in our home. And so that really is, it's so important for been in a man to lead their home wisely with, you know, integrity and just boldness, I believe now. And so, but that wasn't my case. And so fast forward, my mom and my dad divorced when I was 15. My mom became a alcoholic, and just was drinking every single day. And so as a young kid, I have a little brother, and I had to take care of him and also take care of my alcoholic mother while I was, very early on in my teenage years. So that was a huge responsibility for me that I didn't know how to deal with. So that induced my drug addiction and alcoholism to really kind of cope and self-medicate with what I was going through. And so at the age of 18, my mom's still an alcoholic. I'm still deep into my addiction, and I met a boy. Him and I started living together, and shortly after him and I started living together, a girl basically, she persuaded me to come work where she worked. She said I would make a lot of money. I was a beautiful young girl and that I could make a lot of money. And so 2 weeks after my 18th birthday, I walked into my first adult entertainment industry, sexual orientated business, whatever you want to call it, strip club here in Houston, Texas at age 18. And shortly after that, my dad died of pancreatic cancer. And I just dove full on into my addiction and then full on into this new addiction of money, attention, everything that I felt I was lacking I just dove in. I dove in head first, and so I was sucked in, and I was actually in that industry for 10 very long years, a whole decade. So from the age of 18 to 27, my whole young adult life was spent in that environment, very toxic, sexually abused, exploited environment.
Yeah.
And so it was very
right. Yeah. I did that same thing, Jessica. I wanted to put myself through nursing school, so I went and worked at a nightclub. Yeah.
A lot of women, a lot of young women that – yes, ma'am.
Go ahead.
Sorry. A lot of young women that, you know, I've – you know, so I was miraculously healed of October 19th of 2007. God miraculously, like, healed my life. I was literally at death's door, and he healed me. And I've been sober and clean and walking in this new life ever since that day. So – but when I got led back into the industry was through ministry and actually loving on these women, bringing them resources, bringing them gifts, loving on them, encouraging them. And these are I was going back into the same places I actually worked here in Houston, all over Houston. And so a lot of those young girls, that is their story. Their story is, I can't do it, you know, I can't do it by myself. I'm either a single mom, I'm a single woman. I want to pay my way through school. I don't want to be in debt. You know, this will be good money. And, you know, all those types of stories, you hear a lot of them. I put myself through college personally, although I do have some student loans still. I paid a lot of it. I paid all my associate's degree cash, and I did a lot of that too while I was in there, thinking that that would be my backup plan. I needed to have some education because I didn't have anything on my resume. You know, I needed an education, and maybe that would give me kind of a toe in the door, you know what I mean? To a job that could possibly be a career. But unfortunately, it was, that's not what happened for me. So it was a lot more difficult for me to get an employment because I just kept hitting that wall every time I would seek employment. You don't have any experience. You have this bachelor degree, but you have no experience. You have no, you know, and you can't put down, unfortunately, you know, you can't put down that you were, you know, all these transferable skills that you do have from that environment. Because, you know, I had a lot of transferable skills. You know, a lot of these women do. They're entrepreneurs because we're our own bosses, right? We're entrepreneurs, customer service. We're, you know, money management. So there's a lot of great characteristics that we have, you know, that. These women have that I had that, you know, could have been transferable skills, but how do you put that down on a resume and people take you seriously? So it's kind of difficult.
Yeah, I would understand that. So
and that's really what the hurdle is. That's the hurdle that that's the bridge that I'm wanting to create, that I'm wanting to help build. And that, you know, the organizations that I'm working with right now, the Houston 20 Fight for Us, different organizations, you know, Nisi, Hamilton, those are the different people and organizations I'm working with now that we've been preparing and creating a bridge to help these women that are exiting the industry or that want to come out of the industry to really good potential, you know, career choices, like career jobs, not just a minimum wage job, not just, you know, without any benefits or anything, but really good jobs with good industries that can become careers and they could move up. There's no plateau.
Right. I like that. So I know you're going to go deeper into that later, but let's see, you left an abusive house. You saw a lot of domestic violence in your home or not?
No, not necessarily. No, we didn't. There wasn't a lot of domestic violence with my parents. there was definitely some, my mom had some boyfriends that came in and out that were, you know, they had their fights or whatnot, but it wasn't anything, you know, cops didn't get called and stuff like that. It was more of just a lot of, you know, my mom, like with my mom struggling with depression. So it was a lot of just, there was no communication in the home, a lot of lack of, you know, understanding, and a lot of lack of communication. There was really nothing, you know, I couldn't communicate to my mom out of fear that she would get upset with me because, you know, I'm trying to tell her something about maybe being honest about what I'm feeling or something like that, you know. And it was really hard to talk to her about my feelings. And then I couldn't really go to my dad about anything because he just really wasn't really available for those kind of discussions. And then when my parents divorced at 15, I really, you know.
Yeah. I was really thinking before the show about talking about emotional abuse and emotional neglect. And, you know, defining what emotional abuse is, it's kind of hard to define that, don't you think, Jessica, or do you have a good, solid definition of emotional abuse? Do you think you do?
Well, I know I've encountered it, not just as a, you know, I would say I didn't know I was encountering it as a child, you know, but I do have definitely encountered it as an adult. And I would say as an adult encountering it in an adult relationship, it's like manipulation. I think it's a form of manipulation that is rooted in another person's pain, and they're hurting and they don't understand how to express it, but you are their like basically their verbal and emotional punching bag when it comes to, you know, releasing all these things, whether it be anger or fear or resentment or whatever. You get the lashing of that, you know, you get the bat, you get the words, you get the, you know, the silent treatment, you get all those different, you know, sometimes you get screamed at, sometimes you don't, you know what I mean? So it's like you get all the basically the verbal vomit of what they're, you know what I mean? What they're experiencing that they can't really process themselves.
Yeah. Emotionally, I was reading, like, flip the coin, and the people that are emotionally abusive instead of the people, you know, that are abused, if you look at emotionally abusive people and their actions, that kind of tells you what the person that's receiving it. So some of them are controlling who you see or spend with, including friends and family. That's control. And it's emotionally abusive, you know, accusing you of cheating or being jealous outside of relationship, you know, treating you like a possession or property. I mean, that's what, you know, actually a parent do to children, you know. It's like, I can treat you any way because you're my property. I had you. You know, some of them say, well, I can take you out. You know what I'm saying? Because you're mine.
Yeah,
I brought you out anytime I want you.
Yeah, they say, I brought you into this world and I can take you out. Yeah.
I mean, how threatening is that to a child, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So some types of emotional abuse is, you know, just criticizing, name-calling, shaming, blaming, silent treatment, like you said before. Trivializing the other person's concerns, withholding affection and attention. You know, it's just so many things that people can do to cause emotional abuse.
Those are all really good.
And it makes the emotional person have self-doubt, right? They doubt, and they don't even really know who they are. It's like their identity is stripped from them, right?
Absolutely.
And that's not to mention the physical things that it can cause. Depression, anxiety, stomach ulcers, heart palpitations, eating disorders, insomnia, I mean, I think emotional abuse sometimes, and you can't see that like you can see physical or, you know, sexual abuse. You know, it hits you in the core, in your core. You know what I'm saying? It hits you in your identity, in your very self, right? And you feel so unworthy from it. You feel like you're to blame, right? That you're doing something wrong.
That is 100% exactly. I have felt that way, and I've experienced almost every single one of those things that you've said.
Yeah.
And it gets ingrained because you, like you said, because it's not like a black eye, and that it'll eventually heal, right? When it's a heart issue and it's an internal issue, those things are all intertwined with our feelings, our mind, our heart, our soul, you know, they're all intertwined. And so where do you start? You know, where do you start to heal? Because it feels like it's in the very fabric of who you are. So it is truly about relearning your true identity, which for me, my true identity is in Christ. And so who does he say I am, you know, as a daughter of the King? Who does he say that I am? I'm valued, I'm worthy, I'm cherished, you know, and then who am I going to get my validation, to get my, you know, who am I going to? Who am I expecting to bring that to me? You know, people were broken. We can't expect anyone to give us those things that I believe only God can. And so that's where I had to start my journey down that path of healing with intense counseling in 2011. And that was so very pivotal for me personally. I'm a huge advocate of counseling, whether it be Christian counseling or secular counseling. I believe it's huge. It's a huge part of your healing process. And it's a huge part of digging out some of those old things to.
But you have to have the right counselor that's trained competently to counsel what you need, right? I mean, you can't just go to any counselor and expect them to be able to, you know, deal with your issues. They have to be trained to deal with, you know, the abuse, trauma trained.
Correct. No, it is very, very important to, and see what it's very important to go to a trauma-informed, definitely. But sometimes where it's a sticky situation is when you have individuals like me that weren't physically abused, right, that were more emotionally or sexually or whatever, all these things. But the thing about it is that, and my sexual abuse wasn't like one time, right? It was ongoing for 10 years. I was exploited and abused every night in those places. And so you couldn't pinpoint a time, right? It was like all the time. So for me, it was definitely going to someone who was trauma-informed, but I didn't even realize that I had actually gone through what is considered trauma. I did not realize that I had PTSD. I didn't really realize that I had effects from traumatic things. I was just surviving for so long,
right,
that I didn't assume that,
well,
that
let
was
me ask
trauma.
You this.
So,
let me ask you this. Can you connect some dots between what you went through as a child with your mother and how you ended up where you were in the sex industry, in the, you know, the stripper industry or however you'd call it?
There's so many names for it. It's really what it is. It's like, it's prostitution. I mean, that's really when we want to boil down to it, to the truth of it. That's what it is. A lot of people don't identify that's what it is, but that's what I call it, because you're selling your body for, there's a transaction happening, you know? So definitely I did not have my identity. I did not know who I was. I was very, people pleasing. I was about pleasing people. I was about pleasing, you know, not having any wisdom or understanding, not being able to have a safe place to go to. I couldn't go to my mom. I couldn't go to my dad. I couldn't go. I didn't have anybody there, a family member there that I could go to and confide in with these things that I was struggling with when it came to addiction, when it came to going, you know, into these sexual oriented businesses. I couldn't confide in anybody to say, hey,
right.
is this the right thing to do? Am I doing the right thing?
Right.
Do I have a problem? You know, do you think I have a problem?
Right.
This is what I do. Is this a problem? I didn't have anybody
right.
to really have that conversation with. So there wasn't a safe place. So that's really where it stems from, I believe, is
yeah.
not knowing my identity and not having a safe place and person to go to.
Right. Well, I remember when I was a dancer. This was back in the 70s, close to 80s. And I was about, I think about 18, 19. I was, like I said, trying to make money and put myself through nursing school. So I'd dance at night, and then I'd go to school during the day. But I remember liking that atmosphere because it was dark. It was like I could go in there and I wasn't really seen, which I was never seen before, right? I mean, my life was secret, right? Did you ever feel that darkness as a warmth around you or as a blanket around you where you could just hide, you know? You know, the dark. I'm talking about the physical, no light in there except for the, you know, the light on the stage.
Absolutely. I totally can identify with that. I've shared in my testimony sometimes that there was a bottom, and then that bottom got dropped out whenever I basically sold my body for the first time. There was no more Jessica. I was a different person, and I
uh-huh.
loved the fact that I could disassociate with that. You know what I mean? I was basically living like two different lives. So during the day I was going to school. I was, you know, this other individual at one point at 21, I became a mother. So I was a mother. You know what I mean? I was these two different lives. I was juggling these two different lives. And like you said, it was very comforting to know not only that I was what I thought was in control of it, that it didn't have control over me. And it was very comforting because you can just forget about everything. It's almost like you're
right.
numb to everything.
Yeah. And you're getting drunk too. I mean, you know, it's like, you know, you can, it's a place where you can get drunk. You know, you can numb your feelings at work. You know, who has a job where they can drink all night and get paid for it?
Yeah. That's for me, that was like the 18 years old, here I am. I could buy a bottle of Dom Perignon and not be carded. You know, I mean, it was like a pretend world, really.
Yeah.
And it still is. It still is that kind of world in there today, you know.
So, yeah, it's like a fantasy world, you know, where you can be your own, you know, identity or whatever. I mean, you don't have to, nobody knows anybody. Nobody wants to know anybody, you know, especially nobody wants to hear anybody's problems. It's all a big party, you know, it's all about women's bodies and, you know, it's just, you know, wasn't good. I mean, I never slept around with the men that came in the club. I don't know what girls did later on, but, you know, this was the early clubbing time when these things first started opening, you know, and I couldn't sleep with every guy that came in there. I just couldn't, you know. I actually had a boyfriend. He would pick me up at night after the club. I was really in love with him, too. And, you know?
Yeah, I had, that's, that was me too. That's when I first, like I said, that was my daughter's father, actually. So I was with him from the age of 18 to the age of 22. So yeah, he picked me up, you know, from work at night and different things like that. And so, yeah, I had a boyfriend the first, you know, couple of years I was in that industry. But then after that, whenever we broke up and I was a single mom, it was just, you know, me and my daughter. And that was very different.
Yeah.
That,
so did
it
you,
changed
you didn't
a lot
see your
for
daughter.
Me.
You probably didn't. Well, you probably saw your daughter a few hours before you went to work, but you had to sleep.
Yeah, unfortunately,
right.
My drug of choice was cocaine. Well, unfortunately, my drug of choice was cocaine, so I was up quite a bit. Again, having to live this life, you know, these two different lives, you know, I was trying to hide what I was doing at nighttime from people, you know, kind of like my family would question, what are you doing? Oh, I'm a waitress. I'm, you know, at a bar, you know, and so my daughter was going to a very nice private school, you know, pre-K, you know, different things like that during the day. And I would pick her up. And then there were seasons of my life when I was in the industry that I had nannies that would pick her up and do a lot of that stuff so I didn't have to. But, yeah, God really protected my daughter, too, because I should have gone to prison. I should have, you know, gone to jail. I should have had a record. CPS should have gotten my life. I mean, there's so many things that should have happened that God literally protected us from that I'm so very grateful, because now I can, you know, I can see how he's worked, and I have a platform that I could, you know, speak to people and do things that, you know, if I had some of those things, it might not have turned out the same way.
Yeah. So were there drug stuff going on in the clubs, like drugs moving through there?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, I knew every drug dealer at every club. I mean, that was definitely something you knew. You knew who had the drugs.
Yeah.
You knew where to get the drugs.
So when you said you almost went to jail, what was that about?
Oh, wow. I almost went to jail a couple times. I got pulled over, you know, coming home from the club. One time I got into a car wreck, and I was inebriated, and they did a sobriety test on me, and I passed it, miraculously passed it. This was before they did the breathalyzer. So I'm 41, so it's been, you know, I got out of the industry in 2007. So I was in it, you know, from 98 to 2007. So I would be considered like old school, you know, in the industry. So,
yeah.
Cameras. That was before pictures. That was
what
before camera
mean?
Phones. Thank God.
Wow. Thank God.
work at?
In Bossier City, Louisiana. Bossier.
Wow.
Louisiana.
No, that would make you like, you're original OG, like you're original.
I was.
You're the original.
Oh, absolutely.
Original. Yeah.
Yeah. I wouldn't take my top off. The other girl had those little tassels. That was the law. You had to wear the little tassels. You couldn't show your little knobs, you know, whatever you call them. And she would swing them things
actually,
around.
They've actually, you know, I was in it, like I said, I was in it for 10 years. They've actually went through different processes to try to, you know, change the rules and the laws of how the girls dress in there. You know, some of them, some laws made it to where if you weren't licensed to work in the city of Houston or the state of Texas, that you had to wear those coverings over your breast. And then if you were licensed, then you didn't have to wear those. there's been some bizarre things that have gone on. Yeah, and it never stuck, you know. But I never got licensed. Thank God I didn't, because then they would have had, like, your information and stuff. So I didn't get licensed, but I definitely, you know, I abided by the rules of what they tried to, you know, what they told you to do and things like that when they changed it. They changed it up all the time, but there were many times where I should have gone to jail and I didn't. And miraculously, I didn't ever go to jail. But there were times where I sure thought I was going to, because there was just, it didn't look like there was an hope. And I knew I had a problem. I knew I had a problem, but I didn't have anybody to talk to about it.
I remember getting those guys to buy me a drink, because that's what we did, right? That's how we made our money. And the bartender would water down our drink so we wouldn't get drunk. And if I sat, you know, somewhere, I'd pour my drink on the floor of the carpet so they'd have to buy me another one, or in a plant or somewhere, you know. Because, if I got drunk too early, I couldn't function, you know.
I remember those days. Yes, ma'am, we have poles. Yes, there's, yeah. Multiple stages, multiple poles. Yeah. But I wasn't a big acrobat on the poles.
We had one stage. And it was like me and another girl. We switched every other song. That's how early it was back then when I did it. And like I said, I would not take my bra off. I mean, take my top off. And, I did have the G-string thing going on. And I'd wear pantyhose and tuck the pantyhose down in the... When I think of how silly all this was, you know? And it wasn't a very big club at all. I mean, probably 20 people could sit in there. You probably had hundreds in your club.
Oh, yes, hundreds. Yeah.
Yeah, yours is probably a big deal. But as soon as I got my nursing license, I was up out of there. That was not going to be my career. I couldn't stand it. I hated it.
Well, that's so good, though. There's some of those women that are very capable of doing that. I, on the other hand, felt so deep into it and so lost that I saw no way out.
Huh. Well, you probably had different, a different dynamic going on, a lot more different than my dynamic, you know, back in the early when they were first doing all this stuff. The scene that y'all had in Houston was big old places, wasn't it?
We have probably about close to 120 SOBs in just the city of Houston.
What's SOB?
SOB stands for sexually oriented business. So that's what they're categorized as. So but that just categorizes all of them. So that means it could be a strip club, it could be a all nude club, it could be a brothel, or just different things. They're categorized as sexual oriented businesses. So that's about how many we have just in the city of Houston alone, like per square foot of the city. We have the most strip clubs in a city as any city does.
I believe so. Didn't all the dancers have a name? I never had
back in our day, we didn't have a name. But dancers make a name up for themselves, don't they?
Yes, ma'am. It's called your dancer name. Yeah, I had multiple different names because sometimes I would work at different clubs all over Houston. I wouldn't stay at a club that long. I'd stay about a year or two, and then I'd switch to another club. I had multiple names at different places.
Did you have a clientele that followed you where you went?
Ma'am, I did.
Yeah, I figured somebody'd come in and ask for your name, and they'd say, well, she went over there, and they'd be going over there to see you. It's kind of like having a stage presence or, you know, being a kind of a celebrity. It has that kind of a connotation as dancers these days.
Absolutely. It's very glamorized. Yeah, it's very glamorized. And, you know, I believe it's overly glamorized, and there's not enough truth about people talking about the truth about what actually goes on in those places. They're just, based on movies or what the media says, you know, they're just thinking, oh, well, there is just people dancing on a pole. You know, they're just beautiful women, beautiful bodies. You know, they're not hurting anybody or nothing's being, you know, it's not bad, but that's completely wrong. 100% completely wrong.
Yeah. There was no such thing as lap dancing when I was at I mean, that was not a term back in my day. But from what I understand, you can get in trouble for lap dancing, can't you?
No, ma'am. There's full contact dancing. I mean, there's prostitution. There's everything that goes on in those places. There are no limits.
Really?
They might say that, oh, you know, we follow these rules, or they even tell you when you get interviewed there, you know, they'll say, hey, you need to keep 3 feet away, or you need to do this, you need to do that. And they do it for, I think, you know, they kind of rattle it off as if, you know, just kind of something they have to do, liability, you know, for whatever reason they have to do that. But they don't, those things are not enforced. Very, very lightly enforced. Yeah.
Well, you weren't sexually abused as a child, right?
Correct. I was not.
Okay. So, but did you, you know, people like myself who's been sexually abused, sometimes we see our body as an object. And, you know, that was kind of what I did when we go and dance. We're using our body as an object to make money, right? Our flesh. So, you know, I was wondering how, you know, if you could look back and see, you know, what your mother did to you, the way she abused you and neglected you. And I guess in a way you were kind of looking for love in all the wrong places, huh? Were you thinking you might find some love in there? I mean, there is a camaraderie among the girls, aren't there, usually?
Aye.
Huh?
Yes. There was definitely girls that we were like sisterhood. And it was,
yeah.
You know, you stick together. I think definitely it was looking for love in all the wrong places. It was looking for acceptance. It was looking for validation. It was looking for, you know, attention, all those things, you know, that I was desiring, yeah. That I yearned for. That really, a lot of it, even though it was, I didn't want to be doing it. I didn't, you know. It was almost kind of like it was like, you know, they say how like any attention is good attention when it comes to somebody who's been abused, you know, even if it's bad attention, hey, they're getting it. So they feel some type of love, you know, that's kind of how
right.
I guess I could equate it is that even though it wasn't healthy attention, even though I knew it wasn't right, and I was really struggling in it, it was still, it was giving me something that I felt I needed.
So, I mean, this is kind of a rhetorical question, but do you think if you're, if you'd have been in a very healthy, functional family, that you would have ever gone that way? Do you think you would? I think the percentages that you would have gone that way probably would have been lower. I think that about myself.
Hello?
I mean, I, hello, can you hear me?
Yeah, can you hear me?
Yeah, I can.
Maybe not. Can you hear me now?
I can. Is this Jessica?
Hello?
Oh.
No,
hi,
Kathy,
who else on the line?
Can you hear me?
Hey, Kathy.
I had to call in. I've listened to a few things because I was a professional prick teaser in my youth, too. I never called it dancing. I wasn't a drug user. I smoked, but I didn't like to get high and go dance because I might had red eyes. I just didn't. I used it getting in there and getting out of there. But I was a lot older when I started, although I didn't look it. But I tell you, later on, after I divorced my husband, I was 31. I said, well, I can go squeeze a little bit. And put anyway, I danced a little bit in my mid-20s, and then when I divorced for a short time afterwards, and then later on I belly danced because I was just athletically inclined and could do it. But it was totally different. And then when I was in my 30s, I decided to do a little bit of a slight survey and see how many women who were dancing had been sexually abused. And I had not found one who wasn't that I spoke with. Now,
whoa.
Of course, I didn't speak to all of them. But, yeah, I did, and I knew what it was, so I was not looking for attention. I had no, I couldn't believe people were going to pay money for this. I bet there were some nice guys there. If I had had an accident with someone in an automobile accident, it would have been probably more likely that I might have accepted a date with them, because there's no way after I've been in there that I could have ever had some type of a relationship with these people. I mean, they've got me some fantasy person that I'm not, you know? But it's interesting,
yeah.
Because I think that was, oh, and then when I was in my 30s, even though, like you, Pamela, I did not mess around with the guys. I was not my, you know, I had no desire to do that. But, I mean, I certainly didn't have my sexual compass in order. So I that's what I say was my 30s. I got my sexual compass was askew. And then I became a born-again cherry. And I really like telling guys that, you know, I give it away, but when I want to. And, you know, it was really quite useful for me. I did this in the 70s and in the early 80s. So that was my time frame. Yeah, that was my time frame. But I tell you what, I was not, I don't think I had any delusions that this was I love some of these girls because I'd already been traveled around the world. My running was my first thing. I took off, left the country years, just took off, kept moving. So I didn't really have any social ideas anyway, whatever. But I came back and I saw the dancing, and I did never expected it to be, you know, a career or anything. And some of the young girls, to me, I thought to myself, you know, you're a piece of meat. I mean, you know, that's what we are here. You know, what are we talking about? That's all this is. And I didn't realize. And then the probably you, Pamela, could remember because we're probably, you said, closer in age. But the feminists would come in and tell us that we're being exploited. And I didn't know really what that meant. What do you mean I'm being exploited? I left all this money in my hand, and they don't have any money, and it's all coming in my pocket, you know? But then
yeah,
I didn't want to exploit the guys.
I'd say you're exploiting me, feminist. You want me to let go of my money? What do you want? Are you going to help me live? Are you going to pay my
bills?
Well,
that's the whole thing. I didn't want to be exploitive either. I didn't want to exploit anyone. Oh, I was nuts. I was a crazy dancer. I could fired lots of places. I could care less. Well, you know, I really could have. It did not matter to me at all. But when I had my boy, my boobs fell, you know. I nursed him. I could care less. You know, this is my late 20s. I could care less. But when I went back, I figured I can only go, you know, a little bit of time. I'm already 31, you know. That's late. That's old. And you've got a couple more years. But, yeah, I put it all away, and I went into real estate. That's what I started doing. You know, I turned it over. You were talking about having any kind of job skills that you could go ahead and say, hey, you know, I know how to really hustle dudes. I'd be a great salesman. What do you want me to sell, you know? But anyway, I do remember one. They tried to impress you.
You could sell Trojans. You could sell Trojans to them. Tell them, look, stay safe, right?
They said, you just can sell, you know, anyway. I will say, I think I handled it well going. So that was probably my coping. It wasn't drugs. It was traveling. I was on the road. Oh, really, that was very, very many, many tough learning experiences. And I had certain sayings I took with me, walk in the light of the Lord. So that was with me. Whatever I did, it had to come in with that shine on it. And I didn't know what I was doing. I had no idea. But that was really important. And then when I went back, I didn't want to hurt anybody. I danced my first husband through college and paid for his education and put a down payment on a house, you know. And then dumped him because he didn't want to be married, because he was, because I think I started realizing what marriage was, you know. Like I said, in the mid-30s, I started kind of turning myself around, and then married a second time to a treasure of a husband, and he's been an angel for 32 years, and he just
mine's been
away.
An angel for 38.
Yeah, my husband passed away. We probably would have kept going, but he passed away in March this year. So,
Kathy, I'm so sorry.
Well, he was a wonderful man. 32 years of us, you know, together with a marriage, and I can't complain about that. And I'm looking forward to doing different things now. And in the forward, I think I'm going to be working with an organization. I'm looking into it, but I'm not very good at listening to people. So I don't know if I'm going to do that. I don't want to tick everybody off. I tick people off, Pam. I've got that, you know, I tick people off all the time. Equal opportunity piss them off is what I call myself. So,
Kathy, you're a
I've done a lot of investigations. I've popped a few cheating people through the years. And there's an organization called Support Network for Those Abused by Priests, SNAP. And they were very helpful with me because the priests are all hypocrites and they're hiding my rapist today. And there's so much manipulation going on within the churches that I may do some public work on with them. I've been asked and I'm looking into it. How much commitment will I be able to make? Because this is a new chapter. Anyway, I'm taking up time.
So
and you have a wonderful Nishi story. But it's right on. I hear so many... So many of them on other things, and here's one on professional prick teasers. You guys are both professional prick teasers too. You might have danced well too.
We were.
We
used to be.
That's right.
Past tense. Never again.
Oh, that's right. Oh, not even. Yeah, never again. In fact, I think that maybe when you go through that and you've done it this way, you know, when you see women walking around thinking that, you know, I don't know. So would you want to just get up there and shake it, honey? I mean, you know, I don't know. You know, you get my drift, lady. So anyway,
Kathy,
you so much for letting me bust in your story here because I hear a lot of them. But, well, here we go. Here's one of the ones where they went through that. But I like it.
Yeah.
I will share with you and put it up there on YouTube. What's his name? Fred Folsom's Last Call. Shepherd Park in Washington, D.C., and he really captured it in his artwork of Shepherd Park. It was a go-go bar, and it was pretty good.
Oh, wow.
I'll put it up for you. I'll put it up for
you.
Well,
we don't recommend it anymore, do we, Kathy? We don't recommend it.
Oh, heavens no. It's absolutely not. And it's Well, you know, it's very different. I pretty much ran my own show. I mean, I did. I never, just too many things to talk about. But I do remember walking in one time and the guy's trying to put in a couple $100 bills up there. And I'm a doctor. I'm a lawyer. And I put my hand on my hip and I said, do I look like I'm sick or in trouble? I said, you know, well, what's the matter, buddy? And the other guy says, I'm an electrician. I'm a carpenter. I said, well, now you guys, I can sit down and I can have a beer with. Let's talk carpentry, shall we? You know? And those are good guys. We're all right.
So, Kathy, you've told your story on NASCA, right?
Oh, I haven't been out there. I've been in a few. I do what I and I don't mean to interrupt because this is a beautiful story and you're really getting into some lot of things. But no, I haven't been a guest for my hour and a half.
Okay.
Let it all hang out.
All right.
Not yet. Maybe. I will. I don't know. I'll probably upset somebody because I get short.
My question was, why are you after the priest? What is it? Because you were abused by priests or not?
Well, they're abusive. I wasn't personally sexually abused by a priest. I grew up in a household, and I was abused by my brother, my eldest brother. He abused me, and he violently raped me. Later on.
Oh God.
And he now is walking around like his, you know, he goes to church and we're Greek Orthodox and he takes communion and he's doing quite well, so he donates a lot. They all think I don't know. I don't want to say cuss words. You know,
did he ever apologize to you?
But they know. So mother, I wanted to talk to him and mother, moved into his house because he's got, you know, anyway, it doesn't matter. For whatever reason, she said, you know, because I already did the apology thing with him. He said he was sorry. He is ashamed. I don't want to hear it because if you were, then he wasn't, okay? He just doesn't want to get found out. So Mama wanted me to talk to him, and I said, fine, I'll talk to him with his priest on the phone. And that's when I woke up and I found out the deep hypocrisy in these churches. They're after money. They don't care about people. They care about their jobs, just like so many other people. I mean, I get worried about schools, people, you know. I like the families to take care of the children. I don't want these classes teaching kids that they can choose what kind of gender they want to have. Doesn't matter whether they were born in, you know. I'm just sick of it. It nauseates me. So I think children should learn. When they're being trained, they don't train toilets. They train children to clean their genitalia and take care of themselves, you know, physically in that regard. And they should stop calling it toilet training. You know, you should be a big boy and a big girl because you take care of your body and you respect it. And then you don't go do what we did, right? You respect
right.
the body. You know.
Okay.
But it does help your the exercise does help you those things flowing in your body and get you going pretty good. Anyway, I want to hang up and listen online and stop my rambling. And good show, girls. Talk to you later,
Kathy. You come on anytime. You come on
okay,
anytime
bye-bye.
You want. Okay, Jessica, we're back.
Yes, ma'am.
What
she
do you
was
think
so
about
precious.
Kathy? Wasn't she? She is very precious. I want her to call back. She heats up the conversation, doesn't she?
Yes, she does. She's a little firecracker.
She is. So, yeah, she don't pull no bone. Or what do you say? She doesn't pull no... I can't even remember. I'm getting old. let me collect my thoughts a little bit. Where are your thoughts right now, Jessica?
No, it's really interesting to hear about how the strip clubs, how they've just, the evolution of them, you know, from when y'all were doing it to now, You know what I mean? When, if you think about it, y'all were, you said the 70s, early 80s. Well, I was doing it in the late 90s. So it wasn't like it was like, you know, it wasn't like 50 years past. It was just a very short, you know, maybe a couple decades. You know what I mean? Not even two decades, right?
And to see
the evolution of it and to see how it just started gaining momentum, you know, really, really big momentum. And now what it's evolved into, and, you know, not only is it just, now it's not, you know, now it's gone from what you were saying, you and her were saying where, oh, you know, I wouldn't take my top off and you didn't have to do a dance. There was no such thing as that. And then there was no such thing as this. And we didn't, you know, there was no sex with the customers. There was no prostitution or anything like that. You know, to now, let's fast forward to now, even when I got in it in 1998, all of that was going on, what I just said. Everything was going on at that point in time, drugs, alcohol, prostitution, everything was going on, you know, at that point in time. And then also now we've added human trafficking through those industries. You get minors and you get women. Well, you get pimps and traffickers that bring their women into those clubs to exploit them and sell them to clientele.
Oh, wow.
Huh.
And also you get pimps and traffickers that go in.
Where are the cops in all this?
Well, that's, you know, unfortunately, because they are a licensed business, right? They are licensed SOB. That's why I use that word, SOB. They're, you know, sexual oriented businesses. They're licensed. They've done what they needed to do by law to run their business, you know? So a lot of these, you know, these businesses are running legally, right? And that's the other thing that's confusing, you know, which I like that Kathy brought up. She brought up at the very end how we as a society are ushering in a lot of confusion, especially into our children. And that's really kind of what it's like for people and men, you know, even the patrons. And you know, it stems a lot from pornography. So it's really a fake world. It's a fake, you know, atmosphere. It's not reality, you know. And
yeah.
So, but they're addicted to it.
We have another caller calling. Let's see who this
it's
is.
It's me again.
It's Kathy again.
Yeah, I just wanted to say real quick, I had to call back in. It was like that when we were there. There was prostitution. There was sex trafficking. It was happening. It was definitely happening. Certainly, it was not. It grew, but just as you say, look how far we've gone. Now they're teaching children. It just grew. It wasn't stopped. The push for it, and it was so insightful of you to know it's not good for the men either. You know, it's not healthy. None of it's healthy. The only thing that's healthy about it is you get good exercise. And they pay you to exercise. But it wasn't healthy, and it was not it was the same horrible stuff, you know. Some of the girls were doing under the tables, you know. I mean, it was pretty terrible stuff. But I really did stand out in that I refused to be what can I say? They said, hey, this is just not right. This woman's got a body and a brain. This just doesn't work together. Because I took over the clubs. You don't pay me. I won't lie. And if I do, I was a pain in the ass, and I ended up quitting, and the whole place, they took the liquor licenses from them. They started arresting people because they had to at that time, because at that time they had not yet legally defined what was lewd and lascivious behavior. So they had to actually try people in court and arrest it. And, oh, he did this, and she touched herself there, and she did this. And, of course, they put it in the newspaper, and the place is packed the next day. Oh, my God, it sounds like a porn thing. Well, that all worked fine and dandy. Minneapolis was the forefronter on this until all of a sudden it said, well, Mr. Jones was attending, and Mr. Smith was attending. Well, their names are in the paper, and all of a sudden it was nobody was there. That was where they first started arresting the Johns instead of the hookers out on the street, you know. cleaning up them that way. But, you know, it's just the money is too for the pimps and for the pornography. It's such an easy sell. I mean, talk about it. It's you don't even have to smuggle anything. And you can then kidnap people. But it's not, it's gotten horribly bigger. But what I, worse, but I, what I do admire is some of the girls that probably would have been and seem to be go dancing. They're really doing all these videos, and they've got families. I mean, they're not even really teasing, you know. They're on camera, they're doing a show and a music, and then they go home. It's really like acting. And it was for us, too. We were all playing a part, you know. But anyway, I didn't want to call again, and there I go again, because I can tell you some stories. But, yeah, I closed the places down, and they had two big agencies fighting, and, you know, and I ended up having my own thing and freelancing everybody and put it, ticked off everyone. I tried to rip off my cars, take my car, slashed all my tires, get angry with me, trying to intimidate me, but I didn't care. They went ahead and four guys jacked up my car, had four new tires on there before the bar closed. And that was pretty wild. But, yeah, I didn't care. I did not, they were not, I didn't care. See, one of the other things, light, walk in the light of the Lord, was do it or die trying. So I guess that's what I'll do now. Do it or die trying.
Thank you so much, Kathy. Thank you so
thank
much.
You.
It's definitely, I thank you for your sharing your testimony and what you've been through and things like that. It's you know, it's a sisterhood, you know, when it comes to that, you know, you're my survivor sister. So we've survived that, you know, that horrible ordeal. And now, you know, my goal is to help other women and empower them to know that they're bigger and better than their past, and that their past doesn't define who their future is, and that the Lord can actually lead them to higher places and help them
yeah.
reach their goals and their dreams, you know, because when I was
learn
a little
from
girl.
It. And learn from
right,
it. Yeah.
And learn
yeah.
and grow.
And, yep, absolutely right.
And
wonderful.
Teach,
keep it up.
And teach their children. Yeah, teach their
yep.
children different.
Keep it up. It's good,
right.
good for you.
Yeah.
And I didn't mean to interrupt again, but I heard you at that, and that's just to think that it was different back then. Now it's just as filthy, dirty. It's all. It's been that way since the beginning of the beginning. You know, never
yeah.
changes. Take care. Bye bye.
You're right.
Again.
Thank you, Kathy.
Bye bye. Thank you, Kathy. So, Jessica, I would like for you to talk now, if you would, about what y'all done. In Texas, as far as the laws that are changing and what Governor Abbott's doing there.
Yes, ma'am. So just this past Monday, I was in the Capitol for the bill signing of SB 766 and SB 315. And these are the two bills that I testified on, and along with Niecy Hamilton, we testified together. A couple of other of our other survivor sisters, Kathy McGibbon, there is Lisa Michelle, and my good friend Jennifer Holman and John Clark. These are just some of the women, Rhonda Kirkendall. These are some of the people that testified and were a part of this before I even came onto the scene. So I've known about them wanting to push this into law, but was never asked to be a part of it until this year because I've, you know, I have two little babies. And so I've just been busy doing that and then also busy just doing ministry. So that wasn't, I thought, really wasn't my lane until this year when Jennifer Holman was reached out and asked me if I would mind sharing my testimony. And I said, absolutely, you know, because whatever is going to help, help prevent young girls like I was at 18 to walk into those places and get hired. I want to be a part of it because as much as I thought that I knew what I wanted to do at 18 years old, you know, there's tons of research, not just knowingly, right. Not just, knowing that an 18-year-old isn't capable of making that big decision, you know, cognitively their brain isn't developed. And so there's research that backs this up and, you know, things like that. But it's they don't understand what they're going to get themselves into. like I said, I was naive. I thought she, you know, the woman told me, you're going to make a lot of money. All you have to do is sit down and talk to men and look pretty. You know, you have to, you know, dance on the stage a couple times, but you don't have to do, you know, all you have to do is talk, and you don't have to do anything you don't want to do and all this kind of things, you know, just really, you know, making it feel like, oh, this is going to be easy money. And then you get into it, and once you get into it, you realize it's not, and you realize you get sucked into just the darkness that's there. And you know, for me, I didn't see a way out for a long time. But, you know, law, so I was asked to, you know, testify, share my testimony. And then, you know, it passed unanimously through the House and through the Senate. So it passed unanimously. There was not one nay, not one person against it. And so we were very great. Yeah, we were very grateful for that. I do know, because I could be empathetic, because I was 18 when I started working in these places. I know that once this law was enforced, that many 18-year-old, 19-year-old, 20-year-old women lost their jobs, you know, because of this law being enforced. And for that, I do, you know, I feel sorry for them, you know what I mean? But this is the whole reason why we're coming up with and developing the smart options, is because we want them to know that there are resources available for their immediate needs. There are resources available to them to get jobs, not just jobs, but, you know, future careers, you know, education, you know, all those types of things. We can help connect them with that. And
are there going to be funds available through the government, through the somehow through some organization in the government of Texas because of the bill? Does the bill have any funding with it to help? I mean,
not that I
know. It's going to take
We have tons of resources available through, you know, when it comes to TANF and, you know, different federal, you know, financial funding things. We do have, you know, we have specific places when it comes to job placements. We have specific job placement organizations that work specifically with people who have, you know, issues with their resume, you know, whether it be a gap in employment, whether it be, you know, if they have any type of misdemeanors or felonies on their record. These organizations that we work with are working directly with second chance employers that look at all that stuff and look past it and see truly who you are and see what your potential is and how good of an asset you're going to be to their company. Instead of looking at your past, they look at how you're going to be an asset for their future and for your own future. So we have, you know, plenty
awesome.
Of, yeah.
So have you made any friendships that have lasted over time from going back and helping these girls that keep in contact with you and you keep in contact with them to see how they're doing?
Yes, ma'am, I have. I've been very blessed to have many friends that I still, you know, am in contact with that are still in the industry. There have been women that I've helped, you know, along with the ministries I'm involved in, help walk these women out of the industry and into their new lives, have helped them, you know, with their family's needs, different things like that. One of the women I'm still friends with today, you know, has a beautiful little baby girl that's about to turn one. And, you know, we helped her, you know, with clothes, basically gave her like a virtual baby shower. And, you know, so I'm all about coming alongside of every woman I can and help them in any way that I can so they could succeed and they could understand, you know, their true identity.
Do you have your own website or are you just affiliated with organizations? I mean, I don't know if you have your own.
At this point, I do not have my own website. I've really just kind of been boots on the ground, you know, doing the ministry part, leading volunteer groups into the clubs to really love on the women and you know what I mean, and bring resources to them inside the clubs. Now that I'm on the outside, you know, I'm working with different organizations alongside of every organization I can that has the same, you know, passion and desire to help these women. So I'm open to work with anybody that wants to love on these women.
Too bad I didn't have you when I was dancing a long time ago. Have you come in there and asked me, were you ever sexually abused? Yes, I was. Let me tell you the story, you know, and been able to start healing back in the 70s. I didn't start my healing until I was 54 years old, which I'm 64 now, and finally got healed. I don't hardly ever get triggered anymore. I don't have dreams. I don't think about my abuser. You know, I can get triggered, but very rarely. I'm just so happy that laws are being passed to help women, you know, get out of the skin business. And I mean that even for children that are being in the skin business, is whoever, you know, is abusing them. The object that they become to be predators, right? And don't you think in a way you could call those places predator dens? Women are predators after the men, and the men are predators after the women. And then how many families are being destroyed because these men are going after these women and their wives find out, you know, or vice versa when these women and the men find out. I mean, it's just, you know. I don't know.
Yeah, it's ravaging to our society. It really is. It's the step up from, you know, the porn addiction to where it's like, okay, I see it on a computer, now I want to see it in real life. And so it just escalates, you know, and industry is a part of that escalation. And it's only going to lead to more things, right? Because we have this massive social media presence to where you could post anything in your, you know, in all your glory, you could post whatever you want to on the internet now, and it's not taken down in certain social media, you know, platforms and things like that. And there's, you know, there's private websites where you can, you know, log in and, you know, do it on the internet. It's still pornography. It's still exploitation. Pornography exploits women. Pornography is directly tied to sex trafficking. It fuels sex trafficking. It fuels the addiction. It fuels the hunger, and it fuels the demand. And so that's really where, you know, and they're all intertwined, all of them, the sexual orientated business, human trafficking, all of it is all connected. It's all connected. And it all overlaps itself. So it's not just, they're not separate things going on individually. They're all stemming from the same thing.
Huh. That's kind of...
Which is, you know, which is really, again, the whole issue, what I was saying earlier about having, we need to have men leaders, you know, in our home, you know, in the home, men that honor honor their wives, that honor their children, that take care of, you know, and provide not only just, you know, monetarily, but emotionally. And you know what I'm saying? So it's really
strong men to stand up going on. What you ought to do, Jessica, is take a group of praying men to talk to these women and tell them, look, you know, I respect you. You understand what I'm saying? They need men also to stand up for them.
Absolutely,
you know,
because they're not being protected. They're not being protected by men or the man that maybe was raising them or whatever. They're not being protected by a man. They're being exploited, and they're being used by a man.
Yeah.
And
so they need to see that there are men out there that do not do this, okay?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
They need to see, because they don't have a vision or a knowing that there are men that don't do what these people do, that there's men that stand against it.
you know?
Absolutely. And there's men, yeah, there's men that, yeah, like I was blessed with my husband 6 years ago. There's men that honor and honor a woman's body and honor her choice and honor her, her as a child of God, as a daughter of the King. He honors, you know what I mean? They lead our family well, you know, and they want to protect and provide with integrity and good character. And so it's like, I want that, you know, that's a huge part of your healing, right? To understand that,
yeah.
You know, not all men are like that. It's a huge part of your healing process.
You know what also needs to be looked at is that some of these women could come out of there and say, look, you brought me into what you lured me into in this business. Because I don't think y'all sign anything to say I won't sue you, do you?
You basically. So what it is you're a 1099. You're a self-employed. Basically, you're your own boss. So you file. You know what I mean? When it comes to like tax time, you're a 1099. So you're self-employed. They have no liability because you're your own boss coming into there. You pay to work there. You pay a fee to work there, and then you're just basically using that their building as office space is what you're doing. You know, you're self-employed.
Then y'all need to get a union together. Get a union that can stop people. Y'all need to combine.
Yeah, and back here, you know what? I think it's so beautiful that you said that because I've said the same thing too. If somebody were to have come in those clubs, like I've been going in those clubs since 2015, if somebody had come in those clubs, how would that have changed my life? You know, so that is very important for us to still keep giving to those organizations that are going into these clubs, that are loving on these women, that, you know, no matter what, they're loving on them and giving them attention and giving them, validating them and telling them that they're precious and they're important, and they're important enough for us to help and walk alongside. And so it's, those things are huge because this isn't going to come down, you know, this isn't just going to get healed just in, we're not going to just stop seeing pornography and human trafficking and sex addiction. We're not going to stop seeing this all at one time. You know, this is going to be a gradual process, grassroots thing. And we're going to just have to, just stand strong and stand firm and knowing that, you know, we can do our own part individually, you know, and we can do our own part collectively with the right organizations that want to help these people in the best way and in the most healthy way and the most successful way.
Well, let me ask you, you were in the business so long. Don't most of these women have drama in their lives?
Oh, yeah, every day.
Men
who it's all about drama.
Okay, because what I'm thinking is, y'all need to get together and get some therapists that will work with these women, because if they go through therapy, they'll see the light. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah,
we have an amazing
organization that we work with called Shield Bearers, and we refer a lot of women to those there, and they actually, you know, it's a nonprofit organization. They help people, and, you know, it's free. I mean, we have those resources.
Cool.
We have free counseling. We can get you to see someone for free, you know, no cost to you. We want that, you know. But like I had said earlier, I didn't really realize, you know, and like you said earlier, you didn't really start healing from your trauma until very later on in your life. There was a big part of your life in my life where we were just surviving with the trauma, and we were doing our best to kind of keep it at bay and to, you know, just deal with it. We thought it was something we had to just deal with, that it was, you know what I mean? So
why,
to really, you
yeah,
know,
but that's why we're
just,
going
that's
back.
Why we always give them.
And that's why, because we know what we've been through and what it's going to take them to go through, we're going back to get them, kind of like soldiers going back to their wounded, right? We're going back.
Amen.
To
that's
war.
What, yeah.
Yeah, we're going back.
That's exactly
wounded.
What.
Yeah.
whenever on October 19th of 2007, when God saved me, he told me, he goes, Jessica, I've rescued you from the darkness. I'm going to equip you to go back into the darkness and rescue others for me.
That's
and that
right.
is my, that is,
Amen.
That is my plan.
Awesome.
And that's what I plan on doing.
That's your
I know God's going to protect me. Yeah, I know God's going to protect me in the darkness. Even if I got to go to the darkness of, you know, of the, you know, the Capitol and testify in front of, you know, everybody, God himself. So it's like, it doesn't matter because I know that I'm fighting for the right thing. And I know even despite sometimes even the women, they don't understand, you know, why we're fighting for this because, if you know, people are losing their jobs and things like that. I just pray that, you know, they would have just a just an understanding that this is for their benefit. And I pray that they would just know that we are here to walk alongside them. We're not here to make life harder on them. We're here to help them, you know.
Right. Hey, you know who this model, who you're kind of modeling this after? Do you know who Abby Johnson is?
Oh, I love Abby Johnson. Yeah, pro-life. I follow her on all her social media. She's amazing.
That's who this model is about. It's the same as what she's doing. They're going and they're talking to these workers who don't want to be in the abortion clinics doing these abortions, but, you know, they don't feel like they can find better jobs. They don't have any support. And what they're going, and her business is called something about No One Left. No One Left. And what that is nobody left to do these abortions. They won't have any, you know, any people that'll go there and work in the clinic. And it'll shut them down. So that's eventually going to happen, too. If you get all them girls out of there, that business could shut down.
Mm-hmm.
Which I don't know if that's your purpose, but, you know, to get them all out. I mean, I'm sure that,
you know. Oh gosh. Well, that would be beautiful, I think. I don't think it would be harmful. It'd be beautiful to have all of them fully, you know, operating in their gifts and their and operating in what they want to do and their and you know what I mean? It's like when I shared at my test when I testified, I shared that when I was in fifth grade, I wrote down on a piece of paper for a time capsule that we were burying in our elementary school. I wanted to be a WNBA basketball player. I wanted to be a mom, and
yeah.
I wanted to walk down in my wedding day.
Oh.
And so
look,
I didn't
Jess,
dream about.
Got a minute, 30 seconds. I want to give you about 30 seconds to tell our audience goodnight and leave them with the nugget.
Okay. Awesome. Well, thank you so much for having me on again. It was so wonderful. Thank you, Kathy, for calling in and just giving us such wonderful your testimony and sharing with us. I'm just so very honored to share what God is doing in this realm and give hope to somebody that it might be in this industry, might be coming out of this industry, might have been affected by the SMART Act. Please know that we are here for you. We want to come alongside of you, and we love you, and we are honored that that we get this opportunity to help in this way and to be a part of the bill changing and just shaking up this industry so we can, you know, eventually just we could succeed and we could take over it and not be taking over and exploiting our children anymore. And so we will have the victory instead of it. And so, the nugget.
How can you be reached, Jessica? How can you be reached?
You could find me on Facebook. I'm at Jessica Wesley, W-E-S-L-E-Y. You could find me on Instagram. I'm at jwesley101907. Or you could email me at jessicawesley79@gmail.com. And I'd love to hear from anyone who has any questions.
Okay. From NASCA, this is Pamela. Good night.
Blog Talk Radio.